Hello, everybody, and welcome back to For the Girls. What an absolutely incredible weekend race. We did have a Max Verstappen win, but F1 is back. I am declaring it. I think we can all agree. Racing in 2024 has been incredible these past several races. So I was in Montreal in person. We'll be diving into that full experience with being behind the scenes with Red Bull as part of their Soapbox racing shoot, interviewing Alex Albon, spending Thursday in the Mercedes paddock and garage, and of course the entire track weekend experience. So a ton to share. We have our full Alex Albon interview coming on Thursday. We cannot wait for you all to hear it. It was incredible and I'm still pinching myself, but we'll dive right in. I'm Tiggy.
I'm Chessa.
And I'm Sarah. Jumping into overall thoughts and takeaways, completely agree. F1 is back. It was a thriller right to the finish. The three of us were texting the entire race, having multiple lead changes. The Max, George, Lando, and Oscar thrown in battle for the podium was amazing. Ton of tire strategy with the rain. I absolutely love this race. I think there were so many interesting factors up and down the board, from the Ferrari double DNF to Checo DNF, the Williams double DNF, a lot of varying fortunes on the grid. But it, I think, has become clear at this point that the last couple races aren't a fluke and we truly are entering kind of a revamped, more competitive era of F1. When Lando pulled 6 seconds ahead of Max in a couple laps, it was giving 2023 Max. It was crazy. It was very, very
car.
Exciting. I know, but it was bound to happen because he got lucky with the safety car in Miami. So It comes back around to be unlucky, I feel like, always with safety cars. But I loved it. So much good wheel-to-wheel action. And I think, hopefully, more casual F1 fans who haven't been as engaged recently will be getting back into it. And I hope all those people were watching this race.
Okay, so that's what I was saying, and that's what I texted to Tiggy and Sarah. I said, if anyone is ever looking to get into F1 and needs a race that will literally teach them everything they need to know all in one race, like, this was it. It wasn't just amazing wheel-to-wheel action, but the rain, the strategy that came with that, had a pit stop, because what you were able to see was like all of the racing lines. Like, the footage was incredible. You can see the track drying out, having the drivers figure out, when do we switch to inters? Do we need a new pair of inters? Do we go inter slick inter? Do we go to full wets? Like, it was just unbelievable. And it was such a fun race to watch from a technical perspective, also from like just a really fun race to see the wheel-to-wheel action. And I feel extremely, extremely hopeful. And I was sitting watching it being like, if this is truly what's happening and it's going to continue this season, think about what could happen next season. Like, literally could be the best year of Formula One in a really long time.
And then the regulations are changing. I 100% agree. And I think even from the beginning, it was just full action the entire time. Like, remember watching Kevin Magnussen charge up 10 spots on the grid on his wets and then
in 7 laps,
that not being the right move after all. But it was really fun to watch for those.
It felt like there were 4 races in this race, because by the end of the race, that felt like it had happened 2 weeks ago.
Literally. I was like, is Kevin Magnussen going to win the Canadian Grand Prix? But alas, it was, I think I have to declare this my favorite race of the year. Being there in person, the weather was absolutely crazy. And just on either side of the extreme, it would torrentially downpour for 5 minutes and then be sunny. And people were taking their ponchos on and off. So it was crazy in person, but also obviously on the TV. And then I think just a couple of other things to note, between the track being resurfaced and teams having kind of limited data and not really knowing what was going to, you know, which car setup was going to be great for this weekend, the Mercedes upgrades, the Red Bull uncertainty. Max did pull it out, but, you know, it was a little iffy there at the beginning of the weekend. And then all the driver announcements, it just kind of felt like a perfect storm of a weekend. And it all,
no pun intended.
Yeah.
Tiggy, they needed your meteorological skills on the Ferrari pit wall when it was very obviously going to rain again.
Sending Charles out on hards, I was feeling so bad for him.
I texted you guys and I was like, do they not even have the weather app on their phones? Because even my Google weather app is telling me what the
every other team was very clearly communicating. Rain in 15 laps, rain in 10 laps, another cell coming through. And I feel so bad, because if you're having severe enough engine problems that the car might need to be retired, making him drive around in 20th and get lapped by Max and all the front runners when you're then going to retire the car just feels
being the only driver on slicks, just awful. So for MVPs and LVPs, for me, I know Mercedes had a little bit of an up and down race, but I have to give it to them as an MVP for reinserting themselves into the conversation. The car was looking really good all weekend in practice, in quali. Just being there for quali was electric, watching the Mercedes go by, and there was a lot of energy in the stands for them. So really awesome to see them back up and George on podium, first Mercedes podium of the year. Yes, it would have been better if he had won, but that's okay. And then I have to give a second MVP to Albon's overtake. Someone I think commented on our Instagram that it was a parting of the Red Seas by Moses. And that's exactly what it was. I've never seen a move like that in F1. It was incredible.
For me, I'm going to go with Lando. It was unfortunate again that he got bad luck with his safety car. I really think he would have had a pretty decisive victory if it wasn't for that. His pace definitely seemed to fall off a bit in the back half of the race, but this has shown what we've been talking about recently. We saw this in Miami too, where for someone who has only recently been in a super competitive car that's fighting for wins, he drives like he's been in that position for years. He's so mature, well executed under pressure. And I think it was an interesting contrast to George, because George was in that position and wasn't able to execute and had a lot more mistakes than Lando up against both George v. Lando, George v. Max. I think George kind of realized at the end, ultimately, it was some of those mistakes that cost him. And Lando being able to have the maturity and the racecraft, be able to go wheel to wheel with Max, it was extremely impressive.
My provisional MVP goes out to Haas. That was electric at the beginning of the race. The provisional, because of course it did not last past like the first quarter of the race. And then I think my second MVP will all – or my actual MVP will go to McLaren and Lando too, Sarah. I think it was so cool, and obviously it shows because he got driver of the day. So way to go, Lando. For my LVP, I think I know what y'all are going to say, so I'm going to choose something different and just go with Checo yet again, breaking my heart and disappointing me. But you know what? Like, and we said this too, there was a lot of mistakes that happened today. It was just a tricky, tricky race. So if you take out his terrible performance in quali – and then the fact that he spun out today, like everyone was really spinning out today. So I just feel for him, and he gets my LVP for his quality performance, not necessarily his race performance today.
It's just such a bummer coming off of a contract extension, not to perform well and not to have those good vibes continue and translate into performance, because it just gives the naysayers, I think, more fodder to be like, why did Red Bull make this decision? And
literally,
I think the timing of that announcement was interesting. But now that we've seen a lot of the dominoes continue to fall, it makes a little bit more sense.
Imagine if they made the announcement after this weekend, though. It would have been like, womp, womp.
Maybe they knew he wasn't going to do well, so they were like, let's just get out ahead of it.
That's cool.
For me, I'm going to go with Ferrari. I think to go from Charles winning in Monaco to DNFing, and then also Carlos obviously DNFing, his own fault, that spin was pretty rough. And yes, other people were spinning, but yeah, Ferrari just didn't have the pace all weekend. And then we talked about the strategy of sending Charles out on slicks in a very wet condition track. So I think they just did not have it this weekend, but it's a bummer not to see the consistency. The silver lining is that it opens up P2 and constructors and also drivers championship, I think, a little bit more for McLaren, and Mercedes is still a little farther back, but it's going to make it interesting.
I do agree with Chessa. I think in terms of Checo's performance, it is a little bit comforting, the fact that there were so many offs from everyone, and I think luck did come into it, where I think every single driver had a pretty serious off through the grass and fully cutting a corner, needing to go around the bollard and re-enter. A lot of complaints about unsafe re-entry. So did feel like a bit of a game of luck of who was able to cruise through the grass and somehow get back on unscathed, and who ended up in the wall or taken out by others in that situation, like Albon unfortunately was. And I'm going to go with the Ferrari pit wall and Ferrari reliability. It's hard because we've been talking a lot about how consistent they've been this year, how they've been pretty buttoned up on strategy. And it's really disappointing after such a high for them, a high of the past several years, that win in Monaco, coming into them seemingly making a really, really obvious pit mistake, the problems with Charles's engine. He was getting frustrated with his race engineer. It just felt like nothing was working properly. Again, not retiring the car sooner and making him – I get what they were going with the gamble of, oh, we could put him on hards. Maybe he can last 40 laps. It won't rain that much. When you're in that position, not in the points, you kind of do just need to risk it. But it was a pretty crazy call when it was about to rain.
Seemed absolutely silly.
They had to bring him back in after one lap. Yeah. So it was hard to see. It definitely felt like old Ferrari today, and I can't imagine the whiplash, the amount of emotional up and down poor Charles experiences in this job, like going from the high of his career to this in the span of a couple weeks.
That's Formula One for you. I don't just put that on Ferrari. I think F1, it's a game of extremes, and unless you're Red Bull, I think it's hard to expect the same level of results weekend after weekend.
Okay, so how did our hot takes hold up? Tiggy, go first.
I had a Piastri win. I went back to back on that one. It did not pan out. I was hopeful at one point, but unfortunately not to be.
Mine was a huge fail. I think I had a Carlos win.
I love being bold.
Hard to be more wrong than that this weekend.
I had both McLarens in the top four, which honestly,
good job, Jessa.
Yeah, because think about it. That was a hot take at the time, because that would have meant that the Ferraris and Checo would still be in contention, and we had them not. So to have them both in the top five makes me happy. I think I did a good job.
I will say, I think we might be entering the era where McLaren's on podium is not a hot take anymore.
I agree. We don't want to jinx it.
Okay, so Tiggy, tell us about your entire weekend experience. Sarah and I are waiting with bated breath. We've been trying, for everyone listening, we've been trying to minimize how much we heard from Tiggy throughout the weekend because we were so excited and wanted to hear it fresh on the pod.
Fresh on the pod. We're all hearing it at the same time. Well, yes, and please ask any questions because I'm sure our listeners have the same. But
okay.
Overall, my high level thought is the Canadian Grand Prix is the GOAT. It reminded me a lot of Austin in terms of vibe, in terms of kind of the casualness and the diversity of people it brings, and a lot of serious racing fans too. I think that's Austin. The stands were packed for FP3 and looked totally full. And the number of fans just sticking it out in the rain, the literal hail on Friday. And then I think one of the announcers said, it's singing in the rain joy that Canadians bring. And like, that's kind of how it felt. Like everybody, there was no bad vibes. It was just, it was really cool to see. And Montreal overall, I think, is just the best city. People who know, who have listened to this podcast know that it's probably my favorite city. But there's so much to do. The track is super accessible by metro, though I will get to leaving the track when we discuss quali because it took 2 hours.
Oh, no. It's giving Austin.
Or Austria.
Yeah, it was low-key just as bad, I would say, as Austria.
Yeah, that's spooky.
Yeah, spooky vibes.
For anyone who's been listening since 2023, we were in a grass parking lot in rural Austria for about 3.5 hours.
Yeah. We may or may not have gotten out of the car to direct the traffic ourselves.
But you know what we had in Austria that I did not have in Montreal? We had no rain. We had a car with air conditioning, and we had music, and we had each other.
And we had snacks.
So did not have any of those things this time around. But it was a super mixed fan base. One thing I thought was interesting was that there was merch of literally every team I saw. And maybe that's somewhat typical of races, but everyone, Haas, Alpine, tons of Aston Martin fans because of Stroll. Of I think maybe a higher percentage of Aston Martin fans just given that tie-in to Canada. But one of the cool things about the race is it the casual nature of it, like I was describing, is people can bring in picnic materials, their own food, backpacks, set up camp. Like people were setting up hammocks and just kind of hanging out. And it's on this beautiful park island in the middle of Montreal. And so it's just it's very verdant and green and nice. There's even a beach, which is super cool. So it was a pretty incredible setting.
I'm glad it's as pretty as it looks on TV. I was thinking that today, the shots of them driving, where you could see the water and the greenery. It looks
the
stunning.
Beach was cool.
Yeah, the beach is super cool. The entrance to the paddock is fully like on the water, which is so crazy. I mean, they take people in boats, which is wild.
Whoa.
And speaking of verdant green park vibes, I did see Gary the groundhog. I had a Gary sighting.
Gary almost got taken out today, but he survived.
He did a few times. He's been bold this year. A couple other notes just overall. I think the vibe was really cool. The different languages. So they switch between French and English in the announcements, and they just do them back to back, which is really cool.
Oh, nice.
So I thought that was awesome. And then where we were sitting, quali, I was in grandstand 12, which is right by the first turn. So really incredible seats, lots of sliding at that turn from the rain, but it's a cool part of the track. So that was super fun. Loved, absolutely loved the experience.
Okay, next. Absolutely dying to hear about the Red Bull soapbox whole shoot, it looked absolutely incredible and so fun to get to see a bit of their personalities off track more.
100%. So they do this thing called the Unserious Racing Race Series shoot, where they have drivers race in things that are not cars. So it was a soapbox. Like, it looked like a keg, honestly, but they've done it in all sorts of different things. Just on YouTube, go to Red Bull soapbox races and it's insane.
They had Yuki and Danny in these little mini boats in Miami last year. They do really funny stuff.
Yeah. And then remember the big tractor trailer? Not trailer. The tractor things. That was crazy. But it was just so fun to, A, be behind the scenes for a shoot. I feel like that's not something we think about when we just see the reels and the socials on Instagram or TikTok or whatever. There is so much work and orchestration that goes into even the most casual looking reel, full production crew.
Wow.
They're on schedule, like people running around with headsets in, so many cameras. And when you see it on, I mean, it looks amazing, obviously, on Instagram too, but you know, it's crazy to think about all the stuff that goes behind it.
Also a huge reminder of the work level for the drivers, where we've talked about how they have all the sponsor appearances and then even, yeah, these clips on now that all the teams are so active on social media and it looks like it's a quick, easy thing. And it's
in and out. Yeah. And this was on Wednesday. They start super early in the week.
So early. And there were so many different video things and social clips that they were doing. Obviously we saw the soapbox thing on YouTube, but they were doing like 10 other different social reels and concepts during that shoot, which is kind of cool. But it was fun to watch them be very competitive over something super silly and then also just kind of see their personalities behind the scenes.
Tiggy, share what you said about Max's personality, please.
Sarah's never going to let me forget this. I did say to Sarah, I really like Max in person. He shines more than he does, I feel like, in press conferences or just when you see him being interviewed. He's got a really funny, dry personality and he kind of just rolls with it. And I think the thing I said to Sarah was that he's the most outspoken person without saying much. What he does say carries a lot of weight and it's usually a zinger and pretty funny, but you don't actually hear him speak that much, but I think he's just hilarious. So I enjoyed getting to see his vibe a bit more.
What was the vibe like when he interacted with the other drivers?
So this was something that was super interesting. The dynamics between them, they really seemed like good friends. They were kind of in it together, all four of them, Danny, Yuki, Checo, and Max. They were kind of just hanging out, talking to each other, laughing. And it didn't really feel like it was for show. It just kind of felt like they were all in it together, going through the same craziness that each other was going through. And they seemed to all get along really well, which I thought was cool. Danny and Max, especially, I thought had a good vibe together. Danny, I 100% understand why the teams love him for his marketability. He is so just brings the energy, so smiley, so funny, fist bumping people. I got a Daniel Ricciardo fist bump. That was my first introduction to the Montreal Grand Prix. So it was just really cool. I really liked seeing that and feel so lucky to have been behind the scenes and just kind of following along.
And then you had a really fast turnaround to then go interview Alex, which is crazy. This was like the most insane Wednesday you've probably ever had.
Yeah. By the end of Wednesday, I was like, whew, my work is done.
The weekend's over. Pack it up.
Alex was amazing. We all see him on Instagram and in interviews, and he does seem really down to earth, but meeting him in person, he just seems so nice, normal, down to earth, personable, all the superlatives you can think of. Just, he made me feel so comfortable and was the sweetest. And this experience was kind of funny. So it was I interviewed him at the fan zone and they had to take us up in this back service elevator to get up to him because of all the fans. And I don't know, it just makes you think of what drivers go through in these buildings, like probably go through like service entrances and elevators just to get around everywhere, which I think is kind of interesting. But
there was wild footage of the fans outside the hotels. It looked like it was pretty mobbed everywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, and then that was it for Wednesday. And then on Thursday, you did some stuff with Mercedes.
Yes. So Thursday, I was meeting with some of the Mercedes team members, which was cool. So that was at the track in the paddock. And this was a bit of a saga, which I won't go into too deeply. But long story short, the Quebec police are strict and I did not have the right accreditation on me to get over the bridge onto the right island because my pass was getting handed off to me near the paddock. And most tracks, you can just kind of walk up to the paddock area, even if you don't have a paddock pass. And so it's easy to just kind of hand off. That was not the case here in Montreal. So it was a little bit of a dramatic situation trying to get there. So one of the Mercedes team members had to hijack a golf cart, which was like a 10 to 15 minute ride from this amazing 15 or 16 year old boy named Benjamin. And he drove us on the track, literally on the track on Thursday, which was so cool, to hospitality. But that was great. I went back into the garage and just learned so much more. We did this in Miami, but it's just cool. Every time you go into a garage, you learn, you pick up new things. And so a few fun facts I do want to share. So two sides of the garage. Lewis is the red team. George is the blue team, which I think is interesting color choices. I would switch those two probably, but
yeah, me too.
That's okay. I got to see both of their helmets and gloves, which was cool. They each had three different helmets with different shields and tear-offs that had varied specifications for visibility, which depending on the conditions, I guess they would choose one over the other, which was kind of cool. And they had little cartoons drawn on them, like clouds and this like smiling man, which is funny.
Oh, that's so cute.
I talked to some of the engineers, including one who was working on the gearbox, and he told me there are 3,769 parts of a gearbox and 16,500 pieces in a power unit. So it's crazy.
Wow.
And then got to also see the sensors, which were on the body of the car. And they were telling me that they start with 700 to 800 at the beginning of the season. They now have about 250 for weight reasons, but all of that data is coming to the engineers at any given time. And then last fun fact, Mercedes aims for a 2.2 second pit stop as the perfect number. So that's always what they target in practice, which I think is an interesting factoid, because usually when we see 2 to 2.5, we're like, oh, that's a great pit stop. But 2.2 apparently is the magic number.
There you go.
Yeah.
Tell us any other fun activities while you were there.
So on the way back from the Mercedes paddock on Thursday, I was very lost. I essentially did a whole track walk. I think I had 25,000 steps. But the great thing was I was walking by and I saw the McLaren Lego booth with the giant, massive, full-size McLaren Lego. And I'm walking by, I took a picture and start to walk away. And this woman comes running after me. I'm like, oh no, someone else is going to tell me I'm not allowed to be in this area. Like, I've already been yelled at.
Just trying to leave.
Yeah. And she's like, oh my gosh, I love your podcast. Like, can you come to the booth and come check it out? And would love to chat with you. And so that was fun. I got to make a McLaren Lego car. And so many of you told us that you went to the booth during the race. Such a cool activation. They'll be at Silverstone, Austin, and Mexico City as well. So if you're going to any of those races, definitely check it out. And then maybe just two more things. So people probably saw the Mono Cornudo shirt that I was wearing on Saturday.
Okay, Tiggy, tell us about this restaurant, because this is like Tiggy's wants to be buried at this place.
I literally scatter my ashes at Mono Cornudo.
When Tiggy and Blake went last year, they would literally have breakfast or lunch and dinner there multiple times.
So we lived in Montreal last year for a month and we stumbled into this restaurant.
Well, we should also introduce who Blake is. I don't know if he's had an introduction.
Blake is the boyfriend of the podcast and he put in the work this week. So we're proud.
It's Tiggy's boyfriend.
Yes.
And he really carried the team in me and Tess's absence. So shout out Blake.
He did. We missed you very much, but he did well. I'm proud. But so we stumbled into this restaurant randomly in Montreal last winter and had the best meal of our lives that evening. And we ended up going back in the month we lived there probably 10 times. Went to Montreal in February or January of this year for a weekend. We went 3 times.
Do they know you there now?
Now we know each other. And went this weekend 2 times, only 2. So it was kind of normal, but they were doing a Peroni collaboration. They had a big Ferrari Peroni party on Friday night, which was super cool. I did not go to that, but it's cool that they have a big tie-in with Peroni and the team is just amazing. The restaurant's the best and the merch is iconic. So shout out to them. And then last thing, went to a Red Bull event on Friday night. So this was at the top of the highest building in Montreal, had amazing Ooh. Views, a DJ, simulators. I did finally get on a simulator. I've there never been on one before, but I finally got on one.
How did it go?
So fun. I've learned how to switch gears.
Are you good though?
Downshift. I'm actually not that bad, I don't think.
I'm not That's surprised. Amazing. Good That's for you, hard Kay. With gear shifting.
Yeah, I learned a lot, and I love the Canadian track. Not that I've done a sim on any other track, okay. but I get why drivers like it so much. It's really fun. Although the hairpin, I did not make. Well, I made the hairpin once, going at 5 kilometers per hour in gear once.
But all right, Coach. Tiggy was never an F1 driver in a previous life.
No, I was not. But, you know, maybe I'll get a sim and just practice. So anyway, that was a very long-winded recap of the in-person experience. There will be a vlog this week with lots Ooh. More detail and stuff and visuals, obviously. But thanks for bearing with me.
Well, that was amazing. It sounds so fun. Sarah and I are so sad to miss it. But live vicariously through you. We cannot wait to see the vlog.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion, living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that is with Babbel. If I had one wish, it would be to speak every language, but sadly, I've given up hope on that and have turned my full focus to learning French. Ever since my family lived in Paris, I've been on a French learning journey, taking weekly classes, doing tutoring twice a week, listening to French podcasts daily. But the only consistent way I've been able to feel immersed and feel like I'm actually improving each day is with Babbel. It is so easy to integrate into my daily routine, learn how to order food, ask for directions, speak to merchants. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent, which has been a godsend for me in French. It's developed by over 200 expert linguists, and one study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. To join millions of Babbel language learners across all age groups, here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, babbel.com/FTG. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/FTG, spelled BABBEL.com/FTG. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Women's health is so important, and balanced hormones are key to that. We've been loving Hormone Harmony, an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution for women of all ages from Happy Mammoth. Hormone Harmony contains adaptogens, which are science-backed herbal extracts that help your body adapt to stressors like hormonal changes and all the things that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Happy Mammoth as a company is so incredible. It's committed to making women's lives easier, and they actually have a whole range of products to help that. Another one that we've been loving is Estro Control, which you take to help support and balance you throughout your entire cycle, and it really helps ease all of those PMS symptoms. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off of your order at happymammoth.com with code F1RTheGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, and use code F1RTheGirls for 15% off today. Spring is over, and it's not too late to get yourself an iconic pair of Tecovas cowboy boots before the summer. They are the coolest addition to any outfit and add such a fun flair to literally anything that you're wearing. And with every pair of Tecovas boots, you can expect handmade quality, first wear comfort, which means that you don't have to break them in. You can just wear them right away. It's truly amazing. And of course, the timeless Western style that is so unique to Tecovas. The boots are made from premium bovine and exotic leathers and can truly last you your entire lifetime. So head on over to your local store. It's the best way to shop. Grab a cold one, get fitted by a pro, and shop all of the latest styles. They also offer custom branding and leather stamping if you want to personalize your boots or any of their other leather goods. Tecovas also has beautiful classic straw hats and a gorgeous lineup of rugged and full grain leather bags. And if you can't make it to a store, don't worry, you can shop online. Just visit tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Don't go gently, y'all.
With that, let's jump in. We have a lot to talk about for this race. We'll hit practice really quick. Like Tiggy mentioned, it was hailing and raining for FP1, really tough grip-wise because the track has been newly resurfaced. And as a reminder, we had Alpine's reserve driver Jack Doohan running in Ocon's car. And so in the end, it dried out a little bit. We had Lando, Carlos, and Leclerc on top. For FP2, it started out dry. Then we had some rain. we had some trouble for Charles, who had some issues. He put on inter tires before the track got declared officially wet, kind of foreshadowing for the tire troubles. Later in the weekend, Max had some electrical issues, had to retire halfway through. So then we had Alonso, George, and Stroll. And then for FP3, we had Hamilton topping out the charts there, which was really exciting. Max came in behind Lewis, but still had some issues with the car. And then we had George, Lance, and Oscar. And then Joe had that whole runoff, which, Tiggy, you saw right from where you were sitting.
Yeah, that happened right where my grandstand was, so saw it live. They did get the car off so quickly, which I was incredibly impressed by. It's just Formula One is a machine, but yeah, it was pretty scary. There was a big in the crowd.
For quali, first off, Tiggy, you did a meetup, so tell us about that.
Did the meetup right before quali. It was incredible. I dare say maybe our most successful meetup. We met so many of you and from all over, lots of people from the US, but also all over Canada. And what really touched my heart was seeing people who met in the Discord come together. So
like they came to the race together.
Yes. Well, they came to the meetup together at least. I don't know if they came to the race together, but I know. And it's so nice to meet all of you, but also when you all meet each other, that really warms our hearts. And so this community is just the best part of it all. And then it started pouring at the very tail end of the meetup. So hopefully we'll post some pictures, but you can see the rain starting to come down.
For Q1, this really just kicked off the excitement for the weekend. The Red Bulls were both really struggling. Max was able to pull out a lap at the last second, as he always does, but Checo was not able to finish P16. He was really upset, of course. It was a very shocking start to quali, a big sign that the weekend could have some surprises in store. Checo said it was a total disaster, that there was no grip, a lot of tire issues, and then also eliminated. We had both stakes, Nico and Ocon, but that meant both Williams were through to Q2. So it was very exciting. It was Logan's first Q2 appearance.
For Q2, it was very tight. It looked like it really could have been any Wednesday. The huge shocker here, I mean, it's like we already had one shocker. The second one was that both Ferraris were eliminated. Charles said, quote, "I won't comment here," but I think overall they just had some issues with grip. Albon made it through, which was really great given that he spent so much of Q2 in the garage with a wheel issue, but he made it out, so it must have been all that poutine he ate really energizing him. We had both V-carbs and both Astons in Q3, so eliminated was the Ferraris and Logan in P13, followed by K-Mag and Gasly.
For Q3, this is when it started raining. It was difficult conditions. It wasn't full rain, but it was definitely slippery when everyone was already struggling with grip. There were so many close calls with the wall at turn 14, the wall of champions in quali, including for both Lewis and Max on the edge, our two champions. And after the first set of laps, it was a Mercedes 1-2 with Russell on provisional poles. Everyone went into the pits with about 5 minutes left. And our seats were so fun because we were right at the first turn. So the drivers would come by literally right after they set their lap times. And so we would get to cheer them as soon as they came by, which was cool. And then on Max's last flying lap, he finished with the exact same time as George, 112.000, not even a thousandth separating them. But since George set the time first, he got P1, and this was his second career pole. He was just so excited. I think his caption was "poly moly," and he thanked everyone back at the factory for their work. This is only the second time in F1 history that there was an exact same lap time for pole position, so that was crazy. And also only 200s between George in P1 and Lando in P3. Wow. So George, Max, Lando, then followed by Oscar, Danny Ric in P5. Big performance from him in the wake of some high-profile criticism of his performance from Jacques Villeneuve.
Yeah. What did Danny do to upset him so much? I wonder. Just be awesome.
I think the way he said it was pretty harsh, but people who have listened to the podcast know that I probably don't fully disagree with those comments. I love Danny, but it's been a tough ride.
So after Danny in P5, we had Alonso P6, Lewis P7, Yuki P8, Lance P9, and then Albon in P10.
Then jumping into the race. So this,
buckle up.
felt like it was five races in one, which it kind of was with all the safety cars. But started out as a rainy Sunday. At the start, the rain was pretty light, but everyone went out on inters because of how wet the track itself was. I think we've seen this. I wonder if Tiggy, you thought this in quali. We definitely saw this in Austria, where sometimes it only feels like a really light drizzle or a light mist when you're there, but the track is so wet and the spray is so bad that they need to go out on inters. It's always funny to watch in the pre-race show the drivers trying to get in the cars without their race booties touching the ground or getting wet. And F1 TV had the best line, which I just wanted to repeat because I think it's so true.
Yes.
They said, ever since Verstappen hit that bollard in Miami, we've entered a world where anything seems possible.
Can I reframe that? Ever since Adrian Newey announced his departure from Red Bull, anything seems possible.
That man works hard.
The timing is peculiar, I will say.
Nothing is an accident in Formula One.
And then last thing before getting into the start, everyone started at inters except for the Haases, who started on full wets. And that's a super bold move because they are much slower than the inters, generally speaking.
So for the race start, first of all, people were deciding or trying to figure out if there was going to be a standing race start like we usually see or a rolling race start, which happens sometimes when the track is really wet. But we had a regular race start. George got a great launch off the line, was comfortably ahead of Max for the first few laps. Massive amounts of spray. It's actually crazy how low the visibility can be, and it can be quite dangerous. But luckily, everyone played it pretty safe, slipping around a little bit. I think the announcers called it squirming. So everyone was like kind of squirming around a little bit, but it was a pretty clean first lap. And then this is where things got crazy for the Haases. K-Mag on full wets gained 7 places in the first lap, Hulk gained 5. Like, it was just so fun watching them pick people off. But then, of course, as the track dried out, the full wets didn't help as much. K-Mag switched to inters, and then he had a pretty slow stop and then kind of wiped out all of his gains.
And then next, a big part of the sort of beginning middle part of the race was the great George Max Lando battle for the lead. Both Max and George were really pushing on the edge. Max was about half a second behind George for lap after lap. But then Max, a rare mistake, had an off in some standing water, dropped back while Lando caught up to him. And one thing important to note here is DRS is not enabled in wet conditions, but the track did dry up enough by lap 18 for it to be enabled. So after a few more laps of battling, Lando was able to put a move on Max for P2, which was thrilling to watch. We love seeing Verstappen have to fight a little bit. And only a lap later, Lando had a huge overtake of George, and George was defending so hard at the chicane. He missed the corner, gave Max the opportunity to go through as well, but a very thrilling three-way battle for the lead. And Lando almost immediately pulled out a 6-second gap ahead of Max, which also rare to see.
It was crazy. Then, very sadly for Lando, we had a full safety car after a big hit of the barriers from Logan. The top 5 behind Lando all went into the pits immediately for new enters since there was more incoming rain forecast, which everyone saw except for the Ferrari pit wall. Lando unfortunately got stuck behind the safety car because he had just passed the pit entry when the safety car got called. So everyone behind him was able to pit, but he had to wait a full lap, kind of stuck behind the safety car. So after all the pits, the order ended up being Max, George, Lando, Oscar, and it really felt like a battle between all 4 of them, with Oscar even looking super racy at points. It felt like the podium was just up in the air until about lap 68. It was amazing. Even actually, no, George and Lewis. So yes, actually until the last lap.
It was amazing. And they all kind of crossed the finish line so close together, which we don't ever really get to see as much anymore. So around lap 45, everyone switched from inters to mediums. McLaren kept Lando out for 2 extra laps on the inters, trying to do some laps in the clean air and build a gap while everyone else was on new cold slicks. It was a very interesting strategy call here. So when Lando finally pitted and came out of his pit stop, he came out on in front of Max, but because his tires were cold and Max's were a little bit warmer, Max went through again and pulled a few seconds ahead, despite some of the suspension problems that he was having, saying that he couldn't go over the curbs, which in this track are really important to try to maximize the full racing line. So really, it was just an incredibly tight battle between Lando and Russell for P2, and then they were kind of sliding around, really, really pushing each other to the edge. And George, I think, seemed like a little bit stressed out, kind of what you were saying earlier, Sarah, where Lando seemed so relaxed and in charge, whereas George was a little bit stressed. Toto literally went onto George's radio and was like,
George, calm down, or something. What did he say?
He just said focus.
Focus, George.
Yeah.
It was crazy. That's been so rattling to just, you're trying to race your race, then Toto comes on the radio.
It's like, focus, man.
Focus.
I mean, I think both the Mercedes drivers felt like they didn't drive good races, which is an unfortunate feeling given it was definitely their best result of the season.
Totally.
So I'm glad that the car is back in form, but I hope the two come together where the car is good for the track conditions and the drivers feel like they have a good race. So a second safety car came on lap 54 after Sainz lost control, totally his fault, had a big spin through the grass, and sadly took out Albon. This was really unfortunate because Albon had had a great weekend, was in the running for points, was not his fault at all. Just such a bummer.
F1 can be so brutal.
I know. I appreciated Carlos's caption. He did apologize to Albon in his Instagram
and he did post. On his radio during
on the radio race. Too. Yeah.
So both Mercedes pitted under that safety car. The restart order was Max, Lando, Oscar, George, and Lewis. Lando unfortunately did not just didn't have the pace to challenge Max after the restart, but there was a big Oscar George Lewis battle. So Oscar was not giving up an inch, and George had a big off. Lewis went through at that point. Then Lewis was able to get past George, but George got Lewis back on the last two laps, I think, for podium. But the radio of the week was a George special. Ugly race on my behalf. Sorry for that. So very sad.
It's so hard because you do – I mean, it is their best result. And for them
to both feel
so demoralized.
Podium.
I know.
Yeah.
It's so tough. Bummer. So anyways, I hope everyone was able to hold on for that craziness of a race. It was like the best hour and a half of my entire life.
Couldn't take your eyes away.
So good. And I obviously texted my dad. Been like, this is the best race I've ever seen. He's like, okay, Chessa, don't you remember like 20 years ago when this – and I was like, no, Dad, this is like the best one. So let's go through the teams. Okay, so for Red Bull, like we've been kind of saying, lots of car issues throughout the weekend, electrical problems for Max during practice, struggling with not being able to handle those curbs, like I said earlier. Checo's race was pretty much as bad as Charles's, which we'll get to. So he had contact with Gasly on the first lap and was stuck at the back of the pack. Then lap 50, just dropped it into the wall on a wet patch, completely ruined his rear wing, ended up having to retire. And it's just a bummer for him coming off that extension. So probably feels like the beginning of the end, but let's hope he can pick it back up and get some more momentum later.
Beginning of the end for what?
For Drivers' Championship?
Just for the rest of the season, yeah.
Oh. You know me. You know where my brain goes. I'm pretty pessimistic when it comes to
I don't think Checo's getting P2 in drivers. I'm just going to say that now.
I think he's in P5 right now, which is crazy seeing that he's in a Red Bull. But we still have a lot of time left. And again, just as Max kind of a runner-up MVP here, I feel like what separates Max so much from other drivers, from Checo, from drivers from other teams, is there can be pretty – notable car problems and performance issues, and he can make mistakes, but he always figures out how to recover and put in laps and performances where it counts. I think a lot of people also, when they're struggling with not being able to rely on the car, not being able to, like Chester was saying, take curbs on a track where it's super essential. You could see them flying over the curbs. It was an incredible performance from him, and it's always such a treat when we get to see him do some good wheel-to-wheel racing.
For Ferrari, we've discussed the sort of absolute, total, unmitigated disaster of a weekend, so we won't harp on that too much, but a double DNF for the team. Neither car made Q3. But I think the interesting thing to discuss here is, is Ferrari back to its usual form? Are they going to return and bounce back? It's whiplash immediately after the Monaco victory. Where does Ferrari go from here?
I don't really feel like it's whiplash because we are so used to, at least from last season and the season before, having Ferrari have these super high highs and super low lows. So it's almost kind of back to the regular form in that sense. But I'm really excited about the promise of what we saw in Monaco. And I think we still need at least another race or two. Like, I think throughout the middle of this European stint that's coming up, we'll get a sense of how the season might end for them. So I wouldn't count them out just yet, but definitely – Not a great result for them, given how optimistic we were after Monaco.
I
what
agree.
Do you think, not count them out for P2 in constructors compared to
I just mean more generally, like not counting them out in terms of really being able to fight for podium positions for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think one weekend is not enough of a data point to
exactly
really understand. But I do think the competition is incredibly fierce. And this weekend definitely showed that even more with McLaren, with Mercedes. Mercedes is still trails them by a bit, but it's definitely going to be a tight battle for P2. So Ferrari can't afford to have weekends like this, I think, going forward. On another note, our friend Luke Smith at The Athletic had some really interesting reporting this weekend that Carlos Sainz's options at the top are, quote, dwindling now that Checo is confirmed. In the same article, he noted that it's looking likely that Kimi Antonelli gets the Mercedes seat. And interestingly, Sainz said that he wants a medium to long-term project and that the 2026 regulations make it a bit of a lottery. So maybe not viewing this as the sort of gap year that some of us have been saying. Does, I think Luke's reporting definitely makes it sound like Williams is the front runner. Lawrence Barreto at F1 said something similar in his article as well. But there are a lot of rumors that Carlos has signed a deal already and that it will be announced in the lead up to the Spanish Grand Prix, which is his home race. And with Sauber struggling so much, it definitely makes Williams look more appealing. So I don't know. James Vowles has also been very vocal about wanting to sign Carlos. So that's what I think is happening. I think it's Williams.
I think that makes sense. We'll see. For Mercedes, it was heartbreak for George. Like we said, it was unfortunate that given that it was their first podium in the season, they couldn't be a bit more exciting, but happy that Lewis was able to turn around his worst quality performance in Canada to just missing out on the podium, still a strong P4 for him. But Tiggy, I was wondering what you thought about that pretty spicy Lewis-George battle at the end.
They kept it clean. I think it was racing. I think it was good. It doesn't seem like there are hard feelings. Happy for George to get the podium and happy that Lewis was able to crawl back some positions and make it a little bit exciting at the end. I was hoping for a Lewis podium, but you know, I'm not displeased with how it turned out. So
do you feel like despite their pessimism coming off this weekend that they're knocking and that we'll see some more Lewis podiums? Or get a Lewis podium?
I really want to say yes, but I don't know if their car, again, it's so temperamental. I don't know if this track just really suited them well or if the upgrades really were a huge step forward more generally. What was cool about being in the garage is that I was walked through each one of the upgrades, which was so cool. Like they were showing me the two front wings side by side, the old one and the new one. And
wow.
It was just really cool to kind of see up close and personal what they had changed and what they had done. And it seems to have worked well this weekend. So I hope it continues.
We shall see. For McLaren, excellent weekend for the team. Both drivers looked really strong, especially Lando was able to handle these tricky conditions super well, pushing all out the entire race, and a great result for the team. I think, you know, it's not negative, but I think it's an unfortunate result for Piastri at the end of the race. It really just seemed like he couldn't keep up with the Mercedes. It could have really been like anyone's podium. So he might have just missed out a little bit, but I'm really optimistic for the rest of the season for this team.
We have to talk about the moment he let Lando through off the pit stop. I was like, Oscar, are you being too nice? But it was.
And they had said on the radio that they could fight each other a little bit. So
yeah,
what a good guy.
Good. He's a great teammate. But
I thought that was such good. Yeah. Sport trip.
He'll age out of that though. He'll get hungry next season.
I don't think so. He just seems to be a stand-up guy, but I'm like, take it for yourself, man. Let's go. For Aston Martin, strong P6 and P7 double points finish, including Lance at his home race after largely managing to stay out of trouble. There wasn't a ton of airtime, I don't think, for the Aston Martins this race, which I guess is a good thing. The Alonso Hamilton battle was definitely a treat, both of them having big snaps, needing to cut corners, the whole deal. So always fun to see two greats battle it out.
For VCARB, Danny unfortunately got a 5-second penalty for a false start, which is really rare. It looked a bit harsh because his wheels were just kind of barely rotating forward at the start. And we've seen this not be enforced that strictly in the past, but it seems like they are taking a more harsh approach to that rule. Yuki was on for a strong points finish in the last few laps, but he had a big trip through the grass. He took out a baller. Again, we were talking about kind of just luck. Thankfully, Hulk was able to avoid hitting him, but it was a really close call. So Danny finished P8 ahead of Yuki. He has not been outperforming Yuki recently, so it's a big deal for him and a nice points finish to respond to his critics, aka Jacques Villeneuve.
Right back at the haters for Williams. Really sad double DNF for the team, especially after a really strong weekend for Albon and then having a good quality performance. As we said, Logan kind of went off on his own, a little bit of a mistake there, got himself out of the race, and then Albon got taken out by Carlos when it really wasn't his fault.
Alpine, fresh off the Ocon news, we had an insane double points finish in P9 and P10, also after a wild Monaco weekend for them. This weekend, Gasly survived some lap one contact with Checo, and the Alpines were able to hang on through the chaos. It was honestly extremely impressive considering they started the race in P15 for Gasly and P20 for Ocon.
Wow.
But of course, there was some team order drama. Alpine took Ocon. Alpine told Ocon to let Gasly through to try to fight Danny for P8, and Ocon originally pushed back, but then finally let him through with not enough time left to attack Danny, unfortunately.
For Sauber, both cars started from the pit lane after updating their wings and unfortunately really hung out at the back of the pack for the whole race, couldn't make up much ground. And for Haas, it was glory in the first 10 laps, but
glory.
It was brief because after pitting for Inters, they dropped out of the points. They were quite close to points at the end behind the Alpines, but it was really sad that points weren't in the cards after such a blazing first few laps. It was actually crazy. There was a moment when I was like, Kevin Magnussen is going to podium in this race.
That's what I thought too.
I thought he was going to win. He was going for the win.
All right. Tiggy's next hot take. You heard it here first. Okay. For the standings, everyone's like bated breath with this one because I think it's so crazy to see now. So we have Max at 194. Charles didn't budge. He's at 138. Lando's pushing up at 131. Sainz at 108 and Checo at 107. And then we have Piastri 81, George 69, and Lewis 55. So we're getting like really tight spreads up and down here. Super exciting. For constructors, we have Red Bull at 301. Ferrari did not budge. They're at 252. McLaren coming up tight at 212. And then we have Mercedes at 124. Aston Martin at 58. VCARB at 28. And then Haas 7, Alpine 5, Williams 2. And Sauber still not on the points.
So now it is time for an update in terms of the open seats and unsigned drivers. We've definitely had some dominoes falling. So now that Checo is locked in, the only remaining seat at a top four team is the open seat at Mercedes, which is being rumored to go to Kimi Antonelli, but we will see once someone signs on the dotted line. We also know Alonso is locked in and we can assume Stroll as well. The big news this week was Yuki re-signing with VCARB on a one-year deal, but the other seat is still open. So the rest of the midfield and back of the pack is very up in the air. We have two open seats at Alpine, two open seats at Haas. Sauber is Hulk, and then to be determined second seat, and then one open seat at Williams, assuming that Logan does not get re-signed. So in terms of drivers without seats confirmed, that's Carlos, Bottas, Danny Ricciardo, Pierre Gasly, Esteban Ocon, Sargent, and K-Mag. And then we have some high-profile potential rookies in Ollie Berman, Kimi Antonelli, and of course, Liam Lawson. So,
all right, off the bat, like if we're going to just move our little chess pieces around, I mean, Liam, I think Liam's going to take Danny's seat at VCARB and go with Yuki.
I think so too, and I think that would be the right decision. Does Danny exit the chat or does Danny go to Haas?
That was going to be my next question. I think he would go to Haas. I think he's back in F1 now. I got his point about taking a year off where he wanted to try to have a chance with a team a bit higher up the grid, but I think at this point, if Haas was his only option, I think he would take it, and I think he would be a really good get for them. Again, with the personality, the marketability, he's a multiple Grand Prix winner. He could bring a lot of experience to the team. They have Hülkenberg leaving, who's kind of their most reliable, steady hand. Danny could kind of fill in that role. And as we've seen today, Haas does have its moments. It can be really a Saturday car, but Haas is behind VCARB in constructors, but only by one place. So it's not as if it would be kind of a crazy difference in terms of rank.
Do you think K-Mag will stay?
Yeah, I was going to say, who's your dream Haas lineup then? Is it Daniel Ricciardo, Ollie Berman? Is it...
Yes, a rookie. Danny and a rookie.
My dream Haas lineup? My dream Haas lineup is Bottas and Danny.
Okay.
Can you imagine? I want Berman
like,
on the
that's
grid.
That's just like Botas energy check. Danny energy check. Haas huge energy check, check. That would be awesome, Sarah. I'll never.
Chessa would be a massive, massive fan of this.
I'm about to empty out my entire closet and buy all Haas merch if that's what's going to happen.
I do. We have not talked about Botas much. And when you think about the open drivers we just listed, Carlos is by far the hottest ticket on the driver market right now. But Botas is also a multiple Grand Prix winner. He used to, again, never was able to beat Lewis in the Drivers' Championship, but there was a time when it was him, Verbot was the standard podium. Botas was a more reliable number two driver than Checo is at Red Bull, I would say.
For sure.
Could out-qualify and outperform Lewis on a fairly regular basis. I still think he's a really top caliber driver, has not been able to show it in the car at all, but I really hope he stays in F1, and I hope that I think Haas could be a good option. I think I'd prefer that for him than Alpine probably.
Yeah, I mean, if Carlos goes to Williams, then that's off the table. But I think if Carlos doesn't go to Williams, that's where Botas will probably end up.
But then would Carlos go to Mercedes?
It's on the table.
So looking at the drivers that we just said that who don't have seats next year, besides Logan, do we think any of them won't be in F1 next year?
I think Ocon might be in a dicey situation.
Same. I think a super competitive driver's market is not when you want to be leaving a team on potentially bad terms.
Yeah.
And it's not as if his performance this year or the past couple years has been notable enough that people would overlook that.
I do. Yeah, I agree with that statement, but I do think Ocon is such a talented driver and he has outperformed Gasly many times this year. And I do think he's not the most likable driver. And I think that definitely takes a hit for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be a bummer to see him leave.
What about Gasly? Is he going to stay at Alpine? I'm surprised they haven't announced that yet if he's staying.
I think he would stay.
I think he is staying, but I also think Alpine is in a bit of turmoil at an organizational level that I don't know what the future of the team holds. Although,
well, then
the Renault CEO did say that they will not be selling despite the rumors. So
I think they could go either way. They could be like, we need to maintain some semblance of normalcy here, so let's keep Gasly for whoever comes in after Ocon so that he can kind of like steer the ship. Or they could just be like, full send, what do we have to lose? Let's just get a full new lineup. So only time will tell, and we are inching closer to silly season, although it feels like this might just be an entire season-long silly season.
And the whole thing's going to be flipped on its head in 2026. So speaking of, the FIA has released the 2026 regulations car concept, which features a new, quote, nimble car concept to improve raceability and closer racing. The jury is still out on that, but the cars will be smaller, 30 kilograms lighter, and have redesigned power units with 300% more battery power. They will also be running on 100% sustainable fuel, as we've talked about. The cars will no longer have the traditional DRS system that we are used to. They instead will be having a manual override mode, which deploys extra electrical power to overtake the following car. So we'll do some explainer content on that soon. So be on the lookout for more there.
Max compared it to looking like Mario Kart cars.
Let's go.
He's like, we need some more banana peels.
Yeah. Last piece of really, really fun news from IndyCar. So over the weekend, Jamie Chadwick secured a pole position for the Indy Next race at Road America. That's her first career pole, and that makes her the first female to win a Next pole position since Pippa Mann in 2010. And then she also won the race, which is just so incredible. As a reminder, she races for the Andretti team at Indy Next, and it's just so being amazing to see her coming through and doing so well in IndyCar and just setting such an incredible example at such a big stage. We're so happy for her.
Get this woman an Indy seat.
Let's go.
We're so excited for the Spanish Grand Prix in a couple weeks. And in the meantime, stay tuned for the full Alex Albon interview getting released on Thursday. We cannot wait for you all to hear it.